50% of us are back. Dalish and Justin Cuthbert this morning. We're live from the Jays Care Golf Classic at the Country Club in Woodbridge. We're on site.
The beautiful sounds of grass being mowed as we speak.
Some crickets.
It's empty right now. Sun has just come up a little bit, but
it's going to be a great day.
It's going to be a busy, busy day, especially around our booth here. I feel like the heaviest traffic is going to be right in front of us.
We're sitting on the veranda outside the beautiful golf course here, the Country Club, and quiet right now, but we're expecting a lot of Jays alumni, maybe some actual Jays players sprinkling in here. They got an off day. Hopefully we grab a couple, but we're going to be bringing live interviews for you guys right here on site. It's great to be back.
And this is a home game for me a little bit.
Yeah, Justin lives like a stone's throw.
You're the one who had to
drive to your house,
which was nice.
From the
usually just what roll out of bed. 5:30, you're here.
That's
it's not
right.
A problem.
This was a hike for me. I had to go on the highway at 5 a.m. Not a soul. I was just ripping.
It's pretty nice though. Like if there's any if you have to make your commute at any time,
it's the time to do it.
I mean, obviously, there's some
I have a lot of red lights, though, and I'm sitting there by myself thinking, like, why do these exist at 4:45? Like,
yeah, just have exclusively green lights.
Well, there's nobody there. That's, like, the worst, just sitting there watching the hand count down from 30, thinking I could just
you're at the mercy of it.
But I would never do that. Yeah, it's great to be back. I just had a nice week off, plus a couple days, because I got the virus.
Oh,
2.5 years into the pandemic, I received the virus.
Yeah, how was
and I
that?
Had to take 2 extra days off before my trip. It was fine. Survived
That's
it. Feel great.
Right into vacation? Did it like cut into vacation?
It cut into vacation a bit, but I was only going up north to like Killarney, Manitoulin Island area. My parents have a camp up there, not a cottage. Camps. If you're listening from northern Ontario, you know the difference between a camp and a cottage.
For those who are not enlightened, what is
no service? Absolutely off the grid. The second you get past some parallel, you're done. You can't even call for assistance.
So how do you explain the Instagram stories then?
Well, I finally got back to service. Actually, I was on the top of a mountain for one of those, and I had full bars. We climbed a mountain, but anyway, lovely trip. We got JD back tomorrow. I think he's just taking an extra day. He didn't want to come out to the golf course and get showed up by us.
Yeah. you got a round in as well.
I did get a round of golf and at the end of my vacation, so I'm a little less rusty than you.
I know JD's not a golf guy, but
no.
I don't know. This missing a day like today with former Blue Jays buzzing around.
Yeah, he's probably.
I don't know. It might be worth putting a few in the forest.
Yeah, well, we're going to probably do that, Justin and I, hopefully hitting the links after the show.
We're going to be angling for a tee time. I'm not sure it's possible, but we brought
we'll
our clubs anyway.
And anyway, our show today, 9 to 10 today. That's moving forward, actually. The Fan Morning Show is back to 4 hours, but I'm going to be doing the 9 to 10 a.m. hour by myself moving forward. The Ailish hour.
Breaking news.
So the fourth hour of the podcast, no JD, just me doing A-list for... I'm just kidding. I'll talk about real stuff.
What's the plan? Is it just a couple more interviews?
Tuned.
Is it going to be extended A-list?
Stay tuned. Starts tomorrow.
Okay.
It's going to be electric. The A-list hour or the A-list hour. Okay, we had Jays adjacent weekend, did we ever. Just absolutely dominated the Boston Red Sox. There's nothing better than that. As someone that lived outside of Boston, there's no better feeling as a Toronto sports fan when you just absolutely destroy any Boston team. That happened. One of the best series, and I think Blake actually tweeted it out, best series in Jay's regular season that he's probably ever seen, maybe ever actually happened. And I think that's probably accurate.
By, like, enjoyability?
Enjoyability.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with that because it was an absolute laugher. I mean, everything that could have went right. Actually, I'll rephrase that. Everything that could have went wrong for the Red Sox certainly went wrong for the Red Sox.
They look like a clown team.
Which is exactly. And it was like, it was very, very enjoyable because it was beating up on a clearly inferior opponent, at least over the weekend. They just didn't look ready coming out of the All-Star break. I don't know if they're... You know,
they partied
too hard. I don't know how many All-Stars
the
they ended
All-Star
up sending,
break,
but maybe they all went to a beach somewhere and they were
something.
Not prepared for the weekend.
The Jays looked refreshed, like a team with a mission. They had a bunch of team meetings. I was looking into it. They came back with a kind of like a mentality that this is a new team. Clearly paid off. 40 runs in the series, which is a new club record. That game Friday night, that's going to go down in like the lore of Blue Jays history. I wrote down all the records that were set.
runs and hits at least.
So a brand new team record of runs in a game. The previous record was 24 in 1978. Mm-hmm. So they smoked that. They tied a franchise record for single inning runs with 11. At that point, like, did you feel bad?
No.
My mom did. It was kind of sad.
Yeah. Moms tend to feel bad in those situations, but like, no.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I mean, you wouldn't feel bad for any team, yeah, but especially Boston, New York, in Boston, New York, you would not feel bad at all. At least I didn't feel bad at all.
No, it was awesome.
But it's not just like the records are great. I think they hit the home run cycle in that game, which
the
is
home
very,
run
very
cycle.
Cool. Lots of cool
in
stuff.
In the park, grand slam is probably one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
High comedy, too.
Incredible. And that's only the second time in Blue Jays history that's ever happened. Our guy, Raimel Tapia, mm-hmm, the best Toronto Blue Jays player to ever exist, he's been absolutely fire. Okay, so that's another record, I guess, or like rare thing that happened. Every Blue Jays hitter in the starting lineup notched at least 2 hits. I think multiple players got 6 hits. Lourdes Gurriel went 6-for-7 on, yep, the night, tying the Blue Jays franchise record for most hits in a single game. And he made a fruit cocktail during the game. I don't know if you saw that, but he's just sitting, I guess, like outside the dugout, and he made a fruit cocktail. That's how good the game was going for the Blue Jays. You're like making a fruit cocktail.
That wasn't any fruit cocktail either. I think he was like, there was a splash of apple juice on the menu.
It was extravagant.
And orange juice
chopped
as well.
Chopped up fruit.
It was, he put some time and effort into it. And I guess when you're 6-for-7,
yeah,
of course you did deserve it. But, well, you know, more than the hits, more than the records, the runs, everything, I think it was like a strong reset over the weekend. I think the reset was there with their, mm-hmm, starting pitching. I mean, there was a lot of talk about why isn't Jose Berríos, mm-hmm, pitching the first weekend back, and he would miss, I guess, a start coming, well, the All-Star break, and so on and so forth. But it looks like they presented their best possible version of themselves coming out of the All-Star break. And when you do that and you have success, it's definitely something to build on. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they successfully swept away Boston, pad themselves in the in the wild card race pretty,
yeah,
well,
it
coming out
just
right away.
A team that, like that, they needed, obviously, to get those incredible wins to step up as close as they can. I think I just saw that they have a 75% chance now at making the postseason.
It's a huge, yeah.
That's huge.
A lot of progress was made. And now you have a day off. Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado are not coming north of the border. Now, that doesn't guarantee you anything. Mm-hmm. But they could keep this going a little bit. And, of course, we've got this day off with the Jays care mm-hmm, golf outing. Hopefully there are a couple players. If there was ever going to be a couple active at this event, it's after a weekend like that with a day off, of course. And the vibes, I mean, you have your finger on the pulse of the vibes at all times.
They're high.
It could not be higher right now for Blue Jays.
Especially after a great showing for a lot of the Jays at the All-Star game. Alek Manoah obviously being the guy mic'd up. It was awesome just to hear him. He's clearly got that mentality of being the character charisma guy. He's got that swagger. He was probably the unsung MVP of that game.
Definitely.
Just to see him come out, dominate, then continue when he got a start on the weekend. But the only thing that I kind of thought was weird on Twitter, and this is, you know, you can always text us in 590-590 in the text line. We have a question that was debated on Twitter. So Manoah, you saw him, you had the audio of him at the All-Star game. Awesome, fun, vibesy. But then he plays, what was it, Saturday he pitched?
Yep.
And he's got that weird or that chirpy interaction with some of the Red Sox after he strikes them out. And people thought that he crossed the line a little bit. You know, there's a difference between being a guy with a little bit of an edge and maybe what he did was a little bit of a step too far. As a player, I was like, yeah, hell yeah. You earned that opportunity to rub it in someone's face. But then I saw a coaching staff kind of sitting down with him and saying, hey, let's reel it in a little bit. Like, I assume that's kind of the mentality that they took. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Thought I'd ask you about your opinion on all that.
Well, I think it's polarizing because there's, like, no room for interpretation when you look at what happened. Like, you know exactly what he said. We don't actually know why he said it, at least I don't think, why he was so fired
up
versus those two batters back-to-back. But I like it. I actually like everything that happened. I think there's a time and a place for that. If something did happen to the game, if there was some chirping back and forth, if they were the ones that initiated that little back and forth, that exchange, why not? punctuate a strikeout or those back-to-back, I believe it was back-to-back strikeouts, with a little bit of extra flair at the end. I think if the situation demands it, then that's great. If that's what you're doing at all times, and that's the only way you can get up and be at your best,
too.
I think it does lose its effectiveness. I think it loses its meaning a little bit. I think it's probably a dangerous road to go down if that's the only way you can psych yourself up. But that hasn't been the case with Alek Manoah, who's been dominant from the start of the year, was great at the All-Star game, obviously helped put himself on the map, at least in the public conscious across the entire league, with him being mic'd up. But I also like what happened in the dugout after, where Schneider sort of sat him down. Hey, we're not going to do this every time. We're gonna keep it within reason. We're going to stay within ourselves. So from start to finish, and it helps that they, swept away the Boston Red Sox, and he was at the center of all that. But I think it was all positive. And I'm not going to take anything away from Manoah or the situation. I think it's something to build on, grow from, and continue on. And he's a more terrifying individual now than he was at this time last week.
Hell yeah, especially when you see him, like, having the opportunity to put himself on the map, to see the difference between him having that joyful side. Like, if that was the first time you watched Alek Manoah pitch in an All-Star game, you see him, like, this joyful guy, and then you tune into this weekend against the Red Sox, and he's got that edge. I think he's good. He can show both sides of it. JD tweets that he's the face of baseball. I don't know. He's on to something there.
What do you think was in that paper cup he was consuming beverages?
I don't know, maybe
from,
we'll get to ask him today.
I could see him
coming by.
He looked like he was ready to fire it up after his appearance at the All-Star game. I'm sure they did. But unlike the Red Sox, he came back from Los Angeles with his best stuff, or
that's
close
right.
to his best stuff, and helped the Blue Jays sweep away the Red Sox, which is a great thing.
I just wanted to quickly say thanks to Sam and Brent for covering last week. We had a little bit of a...
The golf guys.
They stepped in on the Fan Morning Show. So quick shout out to them. Just want to make sure that they got their flowers for coming in. I know it's not easy to get up at 5 a.m. and take over the show, so quick shout out to them. So another thing about this Jays successful weekend, they had now they're winning 7 of their last 8 games, and they had previously lost 9 of their last 10 before they had the break. They fired their coach.
Yep.
I think the big question that I want to ask, we got Tim Leeper today, former Blue Jays first base coach. We're going to have a bunch of players. Is how much that All-Star break actually makes a difference, getting a reset? I mean, didn't work for the Red Sox, but how much that can actually, like, propel a team forward, come back? As you said, they're also going to have a depleted roster to play against this week. I'm really curious to what the mentality is during that break. Do the players get a chance to step away? Are they doing a little training? What are the team meetings like, especially coming from a new coach having this break? I think that'll be an interesting conversation to have with Tim Leeper and some of the players, because it clearly gave them a boost. Like, I know when I've played sports, it's sometimes great to walk away from the game, reset, like, get some enjoyment, like, family time, a little vacation time. Maybe you're on the West Coast, a little sunshine. Clearly worked out for the Blue Jays, and hopefully they can string this together. This week is obviously super important. Back at home, feels like it's been a while since they've been back at home. Got loony dogs tomorrow.
Yeah. In addition to, like, the success on the field, Mark Budzinski returned over the weekend.
Yep.
We had news that
wonderful.
Buck Martinez will return to the booth
tomorrow.
So... And that was announced Friday. So everything that happened over the weekend, it seemed, with the All-Stars coming back, the resounding victories, the great news around the ball club, the success under John Schneider so far, like, it is, it's one of the high points for sure, if not the high point of the Blue Jays season, and definitely something to build on.
Especially with you're getting some performance from players that have been, like, secretly sneaky. I think it's time to really put some respect on Raimel Tapia, who sometimes we, at the beginning of the season, he was just like, what are we doing here, right? I remember having conversations with JD where, respectfully, we were not the most impressed with his performance. He's been hitting .354 since June 11th in 94 plate appearances, having one of the best months of his career. Lourdes Gurriel, let me tell you about his month of July, batting .433, third in Blue Jays history, franchise history, for one of the best months of all time. Like, just having that consistency and that production from people a little bit down the lineup. Like, I don't think Vladdy and Bo, we can say, are having the all-star season that we had hoped for. I think even George Springer we could say that there's a room for improvement. But when you're getting production from those guys that, you know, maybe you weren't looking for at the beginning of the season, I think the Blue Jays are poised right now to have just that consistency throughout their lineup. When you need guys to step up and hit in the park grand slams, they could do that, or a triple, like, or a three. What was it he got yesterday? Like a three run. I don't know. They were calling it on the radio or on the broadcast, and they were like, "Oh, we need him to hit another in the park grand slam," and he batted in three. But he's just been, you know, it's just been obviously incredible. I think it just shows that the Jays are a little deeper than we had expected.
Yeah, and I mean, it hasn't been Bo and Vladdy all season necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, Vladdy's been fine, and Bo, there's some room for improvement, but it can still come, and we've been waiting for that. When are they going to rally off 10 in a row? Maybe we're in the midst of it right now, and maybe that breakout from those two guys, that true breakout, is still to come as well, which would be fantastic. But it was everyone Friday night, and it was mostly everyone mm-hmm. over the weekend. I mean, Matt Chapman's sort of breaking out here a little bit. Teoscar homered in that game. Danny Jansen homered twice in that game Friday night. So
Dan Jansen
on the show.
That's only one. Yeah, that's a JD.
And of course from El Tapio with the. I mean we shouldn't too much credit on the inside the park grand slam. It was very cool, it should have just been a flyout. But anyway, everyone on that team, even Kevin Biggio included, like, it seems like everyone is starting to chip in, do their job. Mm-hmm. And if Bo and Vladdy have left room for improvement, which at least I think they have. We could be in for a really, really solid second half, or most of the last couple months of the season here. I mean, it could be what we expected for the majority of the season down the stretch, which would be better, of course, than it happening too soon.
Yeah, I think it's a good time for those sports bettors out there to reevaluate the Jays mm-hmm. World Series odds. I know that they've increased throughout the season, but it might be a good time to sprinkle that in.
And we're closing in on the trade deadline. We expect something to happen, because this team, despite what we've seen lately, despite what we've seen under John Schneider, mm-hmm. Has room for improvement. Certainly, if there was any down spot over the weekend, I think the bullpen looked a little bit shaky Sunday. It didn't have to be used as much as it has been sort of normally or throughout the balance of the season. But I think there's definitely still room for improvement there. We saw their three best pitchers coming out, or at least the three that they trusted most coming out of the All-Star break. We haven't gone through the rotation. They're going to be able to skip a start mm-hmm. for the back end of the rotation here with the off day today. But there's still room for improvement. The vibes could get even stronger if they can make a splash before the deadline and get
deadline
this team
next week
even more.
We've been saying for about a month and a half, what do the Jays need to do with the trade deadline? I feel like things have changed so many times, where it's like starting pitchers, and now, we need bullpen relief, and so now we're a week away, and I think there's still a lot of questions of what they actually need to focus on, what they will be able to...
pitching.
I think you're right. I mean, especially when you saw that they can get 40 runs in a series, like, they definitely have the ability to hit, but yeah, I think the pitching's still going to be the focus, but we'll be able to ask. We're going to have guests all week talking trade deadline. We're going to have a lot of Jays guests today. We're live from the Jays Care Golf Classic at the Country Club in Woodbridge, so we'll have lots of Jays talk for you today. But another thing that happened Friday night was electric night for sports in general. The Jays rolling over the Red Sox, but you know, you're just about to get into bed if you're not out partying on Friday night, and the NHL trade of the century happens.
Yeah.
Just sprinkles in there 11-something p.m. Elliot Friedman comes out of vacation to drop a blockbuster trade. It's one of those ones I think we can just continue to indulge in throughout the next year when we see what sprinkles out. But initial thoughts on the major trade that we saw Friday night.
The major trade was Matthew Tkachuk mm-hmm. to the Florida Panthers, and then he immediately signed for 8 seasons, maximum term, $9.5 million. And this is the first thing I saw. The first tweet I saw from Friedge was, the key return is Jonathan Huberdeau, and I'm like, what?
Right.
What could possibly be going the other way if the
it's
key
like an
return
it's like an NBA trade
is Jonathan Huberdeau? It is mm-hmm. the closest thing we have seen to a legit NBA trade, and of course going to Calgary with Huberdeau, Mackenzie Weegar, Cole Schwint,
and a conditional
first round pick in 2025. So it's going to be a while before they see the fruits of that pick, but still giving up on a player, or having to give up on a player like Matthew Tkachuk, a first-round pick, compulsory. But it's a fascinating trade, because it's like 200-point scorers from last year. One was MVP, was, you know, had an MVP candidate sort of, I guess, on the fringes.
A lot of people on the text line love to say that he should have.
He should have
won the MVP.
Yeah, I think anyone who didn't vote for him was kind of at least validated in their decision a little bit by the way he played in the playoffs. And I wonder if that's the root behind this decision for Billy Zito and the Florida Panthers, because I don't think he played particularly well in the playoffs. But even Tkachuk was fringe MVP candidacy with a 100-point season as well. But I think the situation the teams are in are really fascinating, because one is sort of suffering from the Vegas Golden Knights syndrome, where they just too much too soon. And now all of a sudden, after one breakout year, the Florida Panthers win the President's Trophy and they have to start tearing down. They've lost this offseason alone, I guess you can say Huberdeau, but Giroux, Sherratt, and Mason Marchment. Mm-hmm. Marchment was a key breakout star for them last year, or at least within the middle six. And then they spent two first-round picks. That's why it's 2025, because Giroux and Sherratt went out the door. So they've lost a lot of talent here, but they kind of secure their future a little bit, or at least from a cost control perspective, with a star like Matthew Tkachuk in the system, no questions asked, $9.5 million to pair with Alexander Barkov. It's not so certain for the Calgary Flames, who of course get back this crazy return for Tkachuk.
But all pending UFAs.
But pending UFAs.
And that's what I say when I say we're going to ponder this for the next year, is that if they don't get an opportunity to re-sign these guys, it's just your window closes even faster than it currently was at. And obviously, like, you're hoping you get one or two. Hey, they're both Canadian players, so maybe there's a little bit of an edge to stay in Canada. But that's a huge question mark to have if you're the Calgary Flames.
Just before the trade, I mean, we're talking about Calgary, like, facing a reckoning, right? Like, what is going to happen to this team? They just lost Johnny Gaudreau in free agency for nothing, and they've had to give up on the second-best player on that team in Matthew Tkachuk. And I just wonder now, with Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar being pending unrestricted free agents, like, do you find yourself in the exact same position where you don't have control of a superstar asset who can walk at the end of this season? And the same with Mackenzie Weegar. I just worry about them self-identifying what exactly next season looks like. You lose your best two players, but you can still be competitive. You are coached by Daryl Sutter, you are in a weak division, you play the sort of brand of hockey where you can at least stay competitive without those two players. But what happens if they're just, like, pretty good? And pretty good isn't enough for Jonathan Huberdeau, but you want to still be competitive, so you go past the trade deadline, and you lose, after Gaudreau and Tkachuk, you lose Huberdeau and Weegar.
It's a lot of what ifs, but it can certainly happen. Like, this season,
if it goes to plan, they want to be competitive. Mm-hmm. It could easily happen. And then what?
And you don't want to miss that trade deadline. You need to know at least weeks in advance where teams stand, like, what your plan is, because you could flip one or two of them at the deadline, get more assets if you're not going to be a playoff contention team when, you know, your window is not as I don't know, obvious as you had thought. But it's a tough one to evaluate, and I think a lot of people felt the same way, because Tkachuk is a better player individually, I believe, than either of the assets that Calgary got back. But Calgary got a package that I think is stronger than what the Florida Panthers got. So when you look at who wins this one, I really think it's a fair enough trade, but I give Calgary right now the edge without thinking about what happens at the end of the season, right? If you're looking at it in a vacuum, I think Tkachuk's better than Huberdeau. I think he's better than Weegar. He's better than who those other guys are. And he's better than having a conditional first-round pick, I believe, but he's not better than all of the Flames' package. So if you're looking at who wins, and we might do trade grades, like, I think Calgary has that immediate bump up, like, half a letter grade, in my opinion.
I'm the opposite way.
Okay.
I'll give a half letter grade above to Florida, because they know they're going to have Matthew Tkachuk for the next 8 years.
And he's 4 years younger.
He's 4 years younger.
I'll
they're
say
gonna
that
get,
that's an
they're
important
get
factor.
Pretty much all his prime years, and he's been great for six seasons. So I think for that reason, Florida did well. But Florida has also lost a lot this summer.
That's right.
Just like the Calgary Flames. I think in the end, though, and you're right, we can regrade this down the line. It depends on what Calgary does with these.
That's right.
With
it's so hard to
players.
Yeah, like, in the moment.
And if they decide that they're not going to be competitive next year, even with Huberdeau, and they are able to trade and maybe retain 50% of his salary and trade him to a contender for under $3 million, trade Weegar, you know, retain money on him. The return or the net return on Tkachuk could be massive.
Could be
we could be
bigger.
Talking about 4 first-round picks. We could be talking about 3 first-round picks and 2 second-round picks in exchange for Tkachuk. And then, of course, you're descending in a full-out rebuild, which sucks. It sucks because you just signed Jacob Markstrom, mm-hmm. who's one of the premier goaltenders in the league. You just signed Blake Coleman. It sucks for those guys who thought they were coming to a contender and they thought they were going to play with Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk. But that might be the best thing for them, is to be bad, which sucks too, because that the goal is to be competitive. The goal is to try and win the Stanley Cup. And Calgary, like Florida, was on the top of the pile in terms of teams mm-hmm. last year when looking at the regular season and who we thought could compete for a Stanley Cup. If you had 6-7 teams who was on the short list in terms of championship worthy, I think Florida and Calgary both would have been there. And now, despite this blockbuster trade, which kind of serves their needs a little bit, they might both be worse coming into next season.
What a roller coaster of emotions, though, the last week and a half has been, if you're a Calgary Flames fan. You went from, this is the most dismal offseason, to like, oh, wait, what? Like, maybe there's some hope for us. I don't know. If you're a Calgary Flames fan.
At least a distraction to losing Johnny Gaudreau.
You
got to
let
sure.
us know how that last week has been for you. And I think fans just are excited to see an actual blockbuster trade, like, which hasn't happened in quite a long time, and I think that that's exciting. But I see a lot of discourse now trending towards, well, the players, the all-stars can do whatever they want, they can go to whatever team they want, Austin Matthews ? And it's so easy to get down that rabbit hole of, well, if these guys can leave and go to a different team, that might happen to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Did you have any secondary thoughts about, ooh, this could be something that we might see in a year or two?
More so from the Gaudreau experience, I think.
To be closer
to home.
The Tkachuk
one is interesting. His priorities, I mean, he landed in Florida, which is interesting, right? Like, that's not exactly a hockey hotbed. Mm-hmm. If he went and made sure that he ended up in St. Louis,
get that bag king.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, Jonathan Huberto loved it, which is also an interesting little layer to this. Like, he was one of the people, or one of the few players, few stars, that really wanted to be in Florida, that sort of relished the opportunity to live in Sunrise, be a Florida Panther. So that's a bit surprising in that as well. But I didn't expect Tkachuk to land mm-hmm. in Florida.
I don't
expected
think many
him to be
did.
At the St. Louis Blues.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to pick your. I'm trying to pick my spots with the Austin Matthews discussion.
You don't want to go down that.
And I don't know if this is a perfect parallel.
All right. Well, that's good. At least sense. Also, let us know. 590-590. Great to see people back in the text line. Jeff from Oakville saying that, you know, he's been up there to unplug, jump in a sauna, jump into cool water, just like I just did last week. A couple comments about the Manoah questioning, saying I love him, but got to be on the more professional side. Don't want to see him come across less, more confident is the line. You don't want to step over. But yeah, keep us up, 590-590. You can always text us in. Justin Cuthbert and Ailish this morning. You can hit us up on socials as well. We're starting something called like the poll of the day. Just to get you guys engaged. I know you're listening at 6 a.m. Let's get your brain firing. I was thinking this morning when I woke up that waking up the morning after vacation and going to work has got to be one of the top 5 worst wake-ups. It's if you're ranking worst wake-ups, I think the morning coming back from vacation is one of the toughest. Obviously, waking up hungover is a tough wake-up.
Yes.
And I think waking up late, for me, are the 3 worst wake-ups of all time. There's just panic mode in one of them, just dismal feelings in the other, and you, obviously, hangover is just it's a tough one in general. Those are my 3 worst wake-ups. Always text us in now. Let us know what you think. But, Justin, give me your worst wake-ups.
Yeah, I had 5. The hangover's the worst one. I mean, that's the box check or the box check one.
Yeah.
If you have to like drive too after waking up post, that's tough. But responsibly, obviously. I think the worst one, the worst feeling one, is the nap that went too long.
Oh, and I have that all the time with these morning show hours.
Yes. The nap that goes
too
long.
You're so groggy.
There's no, like, worse feeling. Like, you feel like your head is twice the size as it was when you first laid your head down on the pillow. It's very disorienting. It affects you for, like, hours after. If you wake up at, like, 9 p.m., you can make the executive decision to go back to bed.
Ooh.
But, like, if you wake up from a nap that's too long at, like, 5, it's a day.
It's that 4 to 5 o'clock range. Like, if I'm awake and doing stuff all after the show for a bit, there gets to a point where I'm like, I don't think I can chance it and get a nap in now. I got to push through it, because if I'm napping within the 3 to 5 o'clock range, the rest of my night is a disaster. Okay, that's a great one.
Okay, a couple more. When you should have woken up like a half hour earlier in your full blown panic,
but so I think you had that totally one. I totally agree. The late one.
When you're responsible for someone else getting up, and you have to, so you're miserable waking up, and then you suddenly that person becomes like a chore that you have to like manage at the same time. But the worst one is the early morning workout wake up.
I was gonna say like, after a workout when you're super sore too.
I'd prefer that, but you have to, like, the thought of doing burpees after like 4.5 hours of sleep, like you're a moron and book like that's a 7 a.m workout after going out or being with friends like on a Friday
but
night.
You can sweat it out. That's kind of like the only positive.
It feels good after, but like the experience of dread when you know you have to actually go through a workout. One that might be organized, one that might involve other people.
With other people,
one you can't completely mail in.
Yeah, you can't just slack off.
Like, it's very difficult to get over that.
One more. In a tent. Waking up in a tent.
That's actually, that might be the best one.
That might be the best one.
I absolutely hate waking up.
And then you have to take the tent apart.
It's hot.
It never fits back in the bag. It got bigger somehow.
Yeah, oh, it definitely did. That's actually a brilliant one. I think that's my top one right there.
I forgot to mention that in my rankings. Okay, Steven Allison says, I'm on my way to work after 2 weeks off and I feel like crying. I feel you, Steve.
See, I'm kind of the opposite on that one.
I have a little bit of excitement to be back, for sure. Like, I talked to all my friends.
A little excitement
to be
back, but also, like, I have that guilty feeling when I'm off for too long, and it's just like, okay, I got to get back just to, like, rid myself from this feeling of, like, I've mailed it in for the last 2 weeks. I haven't been a responsible adult. If I can rid myself of that feeling and getting up does that, I'll take it after a vacation.
Okay, keep them coming on the text line. We'll sprinkle those in throughout the day. It's Justin Cuthbert and I live from the Jays Care Golf Classic here at the Country Club in Woodbridge. Beautiful. The sun is starting to come up. We were a bit frigid for the last 30 minutes. There's not a lot of sun on us under this veranda, but hopefully it warms up. Keep us coming. 590-590. Send us in your worst wake-ups. But the return of the A-list is next. I got some good ones. I'm going to tell you why. A celebrity marriage over the weekend means that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are a lock to win the Super Bowl next season.
I can't wait for that.
All right. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We're back with Justin Cuthbert. I'm a frequent co-host of the Fan Morning Show as of late. JD's been using his vacation well, but we're live today from the Jays Care Golf Classic at the Country Club in Woodbridge. We'll be bringing you lots of fun guests that are just going to walk by, and we're going to pull them on the radio and say, have a seat, let's talk about the Red Hot Blue Jays. So stay tuned for that. We got a long show also going until 10 a.m. today. Back in the 4-hour time slot for the Fan Morning Show. So you're going to get lots of us. You can always listen on podcasts wherever you get those on the Fan Morning Show. You have 4 hours to sprinkle throughout your day.
No rest for you this summer, right?
No rest. I mean, I just had a week off, but other than that, no more rest. I don't have many other things planned. We one cottage weekend, but nothing crazy.
I've said it before on here. JD's picking his spots beautifully, just extending these weekends. Yeah. I think it's
he's an expert. He's done it before.
And purposely avoiding golf, I think, is our theory.
I think today, yes. We're here at the Golf Classic. JD, not a big golfer, was a little nervous to get out here, I guess, so he's extended his vacation. Hit us up 590-590 all throughout the day. You can welcome us back. Shout out to Sam and Brent for covering us last week. I asked before we went to break the worst wake-ups. We've got two more here. Brian from Allison, the calf cramp.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one. I haven't had that happen really too much, but
I've had that happen recently. That sucks.
I think that means you're dehydrated too, right?
Yeah. That was I think that was a couple days after a wedding. Still trying to get equilibrium back.
Noah in Newmarket says, for me, it's got to be waking up just before your alarm goes off, so it's not enough time to go back to sleep. Oh,
I kind of love that.
Really?
Because I
not
hate,
when you get up
I
at
5
a.m.
Okay. The sound of the alarm. So if you can beat it by like 2 minutes where it doesn't cost
It happens
you
to me
sleep,
every morning because I can't yeah. sleep within the last 2 hours of getting up because I'm so anxious I'm going to miss it. So I'm like, look, it's like 3. I look at my phone, it's 3:30. I'm like, ah.
That's really the thing with this job is the dread during sleeping hours when you think you might sleep through.
And I set like a bunch of alarms. I get up as soon as the first one goes off, but I have like backups in case that one just doesn't decide to go off.
Are you always checking it too? Like,
yeah,
you, like you're like, I know it's, I know
I put my
I
phone
just
down before
it.
Bed and I'm like, let me just
time.
Like look one more time and make sure my volume's loud. And then I'm like, maybe I accidentally pressed the off button. I check like multiple times. So yeah, it's a tough one. Okay, so that's our poll of the day. Send it in 590-590. Anyway, we're back. It's the A-list. Let's do it.
Now it's time for
hey, yo.
The A-List.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, sports bettors, this one's for you. Go and bet right now on the Bucks to win the Super Bowl next weekend. Tampa Bay Buccaneers are a lock, and this is why. So stay with me on this, okay? If history tells us anything, they're going to win because Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez got married in Las Vegas last weekend. Why does this matter? It comes down to history, okay? J-Lo has been married 4 times. In each of the years that she has had a wedding ring placed upon her finger, Tom Brady has had a championship ring placed upon his finger.
Wow.
Okay? She married Ohani Noah in 1997. That was her first marriage. And University of Michigan went a perfect 12-0 record to being named the national championships in the AP pool. Brady was the backup that year, but he was on the roster, okay? Mm-hmm. Number one. Then she then married Chris Judd in 01. He was in his second year with the Patriots. Tom Brady was his first year as a starter. New England went to beat the Rams in the Super Bowl. 2 rings. Jennifer Lopez then married Mark Anthony in 2004. Brady was in his fifth year with New England. Patriots went on to beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl. 3 for 3 with J-Lo marriages. So I would say that not, like one is, what, a fluke? Two is, I don't know. Three is a trend, I'm going to say. I don't know the saying, but I know I think that the 3 in a row seems to me to be some sort of trend.
It definitely seems that way. As a quick aside, I feel like Mark Anthony's taken it on the chin more than like yeah. anyone.
I didn't know who the first guy she married was.
No, like, I would have thought.
He's a chef.
Would have thought Mark Anthony was. I think there was a backup dancer early on with J-Lo. I could be wrong there.
Yes.
I think there was a backup dancer.
Ohani Noah is a Cuban chef. That's pretty cool.
Okay. I don't know if J-Lo holds this power, but I am very fascinated with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this year.
All right.
Like, why? Why did Tom Brady come back? I don't, like, he's...
Because he's so dramatic and wanted everything to be about him.
He does, but, like, he wanted to be the owner of the Miami Dolphins, right?
There was
like,
a lot of things he wanted
to
do.
Then we had, like, 49ers talk. Mm-hmm. He signed that huge broadcasting deal with Fox. Now, it feels like he's almost setting himself up for failure, but maybe he's buddies with Ben Affleck. Maybe he understood that a wedding was coming, and maybe he knows the power of J-Lo's, I guess, status?
Yeah, that's a good way to put
marital
it.
Marital status?
They're plus 700 to win the Super Bowl. One of the highest odds. You know who does have the highest odds?
It's got to be
Buffalo
Bills, right?
Baby. Yeah. They're back in action. I've been seeing lots of content from the Bills. Getting excited. We won't get into that yet. But yeah, football's just around the corner. If you're looking to bet, get on that. I think that there's something secret there. You know, just $5, as I say.
Just $5, but maybe wait a couple weeks. Do yourself a favor. Maybe it doesn't, you know, start off that great. You can get a better number on Brady. Or it just goes south very, very quickly and you save yourself those $5.
And then you double down.
Or that.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe there's something there. J-Lo is an oracle of the future. Okay, second up in the A-list. This is a weird one. Kendrick Perkins has a side hustle. Okay, don't we all? He owns a multi-million-dollar dog breeding company.
Hmm.
You have a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Would you pay $1 million for a dog?
I don't think he's selling them for $1 million.
Yes. Let me tell you about it. So he currently owns 42 French bulldogs.
Okay.
And it's part of a very high-end breeding process where they are using like genetics and genealogy.
See, I'm uncomfortable with that. It's already a no.
It is uncomfortable, but the current 42 French Bulldogs that he have are estimated to bring in $4 to $5 million in sales. So how this started was he had this original litter of six puppies, and the range is for $8,000 to $20,000. They sold out in 3 days for $60,000. He was like, oh, okay, maybe I got something going on here. So he kind of creates this company called Big League Exotics. Mm-hmm. They built up a kennel, social media pages, etc. This is from Perkins, a quote. He's explaining like how this happened. Originally, Frenchies started. They were just black and white Frenchies. Then all of a sudden, they started coming out with lilac Frenchies that were bluish white, polka dot Frenchies, things of that nature. Then you have the Merles, which I've seen those are really cool. Like they kind of got like pattern-esque. Mm-hmm. Now there's fluffy Frenchies, okay? The fluffy Frenchies are the big breadwinners. They can go from 100K to 150K, and they have like fluffy fur. You know, Bulldogs are kind of like short fur. So they're breeding these fluffy Frenchies. Anyway, they sold one for $1 million. So it's happened. This dog was named Jay-Z. It's a pink husky fluffy. And a UK individual bought it, and they now call this dog the godfather of Frenchies.
Yeah, I'm out on this.
And you can buy his...
I'm very out on this.
You can buy his... what's the proper way to say this?
His genetically modified dogs.
You can buy the genetics to create another part of the breed. You know what I'm trying to say.
I mean, I want all dogs to have a home. I worry that we're creating dogs that are going to be unhealthy.
Yeah.
But because they have been created, I hope there are enough buyers. I'm worried there won't be enough buyers because, well, I guess, I mean, clearly he has a market for them. But this is a bit of a dangerous precedent. I'm not with Perk on this one.
I know a lot of people, and I don't have a dog, but I have a rescue cat, and I would
there you go.
Prefer
You're
to...
You're an upstanding individual.
I
You're
would
not
prefer
Kendrick
to
Perkins.
Get a pet from... somewhere where they are not being bred, you know, like there's already enough pets out there in the world that might just need a home.
Exactly.
And I think this is quite extravagant.
It is cool. Too extravagant.
Yes.
I don't know. It was pink, husky, fluffy, French bulldog. I don't know if I want to see it.
It's actually not that cute. Like I think Frenchies are cute, but like this one is fine. I don't know.
It's just the uniqueness, and the uniqueness is not natural. I don't know if genetic modification is the right word,
no.
But they're cross contaminated.
They're
cross
making
breeding,
their own breed,
and it's whenever that happens, if you create your own breed, it's unnatural.
He says it takes about 6 years to create this new breed, and like it's all luck apparently get the
I'm
one that's like the special stud, and then there's a stud fee. That's what I was looking for. The stud
fee. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's a cool side hustle. Some people got the feet pics and some people got the Frenchies.
I don't have a rescue, but I did pick the runt of the litter. You
oh,
have
that's
to every
nice.
Every dog is important, so there you go.
Oh, okay.
Except maybe pink, husky, fluffy
yeah.
French bulldogs.
Well, if you're
but
listening and you have a pink fluffy Frenchie, sorry. I don't know. Send a pic in actually. I'd love to see. Okay, Colts owner Jim Irsay. Bought one of the most expensive pieces of sports memorabilia this weekend. Just let me give
I
you.
I thought you were gonna say he bought one. Of these dogs.
He did not buy one of these dogs, but he could have bought a couple of them with what he did buy.
Definitely.
So Muhammad Ali's 1974 Rumble in the Jungle Belt. Okay.
Mm.
Did you look this up yet?
No. Nope.
Okay. How much do you think it went for? Don't look at my screen.
Rumble
one of
the
most
the Jungle
expensive
Belt.
So, pieces of sports memorabilia. Let me give you that.
Who did he fight at the Rumble Jungle? Do we know? Anyway, I think it's one of his.
Whatever,
you
know,
Thriller
it's
iconic, Manila.
Okay?
Like we have one of his like top fights ever, right?
Yeah.
I would say $15 million.
Oh, that's way too high.
Is it
lower?
$8 million.
$6.18 million.
I think Jimmy made out well.
Yeah,
on this.
You think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good investment.
Really?
Definitely
eh?
Better than one of those dogs.
Definitely better than one of the dogs. I thought $6.2 million was quite a lot. But then I looked at what the other, like the top ever sports memorabilia sale was. And this is all like during those like little private auctions. $9.2 million for the 1986 World Cup jersey worn by Diego Maradona, who scored two of the most famous goals in history.
Hand of God.
You think that one's probably worth
9.2? Yeah, but I mean, I think on the grand scheme of things, Muhammad Ali is... maybe not bigger globally. Soccer, Maradona's brand is huge. But, like, didn't Wayne Gretzky's rookie card go for, like, $1 million in the last
year?
Yeah,
a million compared to 9.2, though?
No, that's what I mean. Like, Wayne Gretzky is not... Wayne Gretzky is massive. He's not Muhammad Ali. He's not even close. He's not in the same league as Muhammad Ali. And for his rookie card to only be $5 million short of one of the more iconic athletes in history, the history of the world, his one of his great moments, I think the Ursae investment... better than the Gretzky investment.
I'm trying to pull up what the Gretzky card went for. But the second most expensive, which this one, shocking, 1892 Olympic Manifesto, which basically created the new Olympics, sold for $8.8 million. Like, that's a piece of incredible history, obviously.
Yeah.
I had a list here. Oh, here it is.
I'm okay with that one being more than Ali.
Okay. I'm looking for the Gretzky card to see exactly how much it was. But, you got to scroll way down the list here.
Yeah, way like, down the list.
It's not even on here.
It was around $1 million, I'm pretty sure.
Great radio, sorry. But it's...
Someone
it's,
on our text line
it's like the, I'm sure people know. But I think the baseball stuff kind of goes for the most. Like, when I look through the list, like, Babe Ruth jersey, rules of baseball,
which is surprising. I think if there's
card,
any depreciating asset, it might be that
World Series rings. There's a lot. Anyway, it's pretty cool to look through it. I mean, I'm not thinking that I'm gonna ever afford one of these. Here's
what do you think Jimmy does with that? Do you think he like straps it on?
No way.
Celebrates.
That's going on the wall.
He'll bust it out if the Colts ever.
Hey, if the Colts ever do anything, that's being worn in the parade.
Instead of like the WWE belt.
Yeah, that's
no,
pretty cool.
He's going to treat that with the utmost
I
respect,
so.
Which he should. But I do, like, at some point, like, when's enough enough? When is enough enough?
The Gretzky rookie card, here's a good text in. There's multiple, whereas the Muhammad Ali belt is one of one.
That is a good point.
Yeah, I wonder how many they make of, like, I wish you knew, like, there's one of 100 Gretzky cards out there. But, like, I don't know how many they're pumping out back then.
And championship belts now, like, have lost their meaning, it seems like. Like, it's not, they're not, like, all the UFC ones look the same.
Don't and no, say that
and,
to Blake.
And they're not going to be, what is the AEW
yeah,
belt?
Yeah, like, probably like, hey, the most buddy, iconic. I'd pay $7 million for whatever, someone. I don't know their names, unfortunately. He'd be disappointed.
I think any boxing belt is, like, no one cares about now. Like, literally, they're just kind of
Muhammad
accessories
Ali.
That no one really pays attention to. As I mentioned, the UFC one's the same. They don't really have any, like, lasting impression, I don't think. So I think it's, like, the last, not the last of a dying breed, but among a dying breed, which is why I think it would be a little bit more valuable in the end.
Okay, one more
And, of
more
course,
text,
Ali's
then.
One of a kind. Well, literally one of a kind.
Yeah, iconic worldwide, as you said. So Gretzky rookie card that was sold for $1 million was signed, and PSA 10, which is gem mint condition. I just Googled it.
Now, if he signs it, does he sign the actual card or, like, the laminate?
That's
overneath,
a great
over
question.
Because it wouldn't be...
Because then would it depreciate the value if he's, like, put ink on it?
I feel like it would, and you'd have, like, maybe imprints on it.
This guy
know.
Clearly knows in the text line a lot about cards, so please answer us about...
We may need a little help.
Yeah, I
regard.
Need to know if it actually is on the card or on the plastic. Okay, two more of the texts about what the worst wake up is. Waking up under a pool table locked in a nightclub.
That's tough.
That's a story.
At least you have a story, though.
Yeah, but there's something good there. I try to keep it short. I was late to catch a bus from Mexico to where I live, quite a ways away from my girlfriend's house. Made it as far as an outdoor rink, fell asleep on the bench, woke up in the morning with guys practicing lacrosse. That sounds like a weird fever dream. Like, that can't, is that
Sorry,
real?
Outdoor rink, Mexico?
Yeah.
Sounds made up.
I don't know, but that's Al from Leslie, I think, just texted that in.
We're going to need proof of that, Al.
Yeah, I'd love to know. Okay, so we got, as I said, a lot of guests today. We're live on site at Jay's Care Golf Classic. We're going to be bringing you people as they walk by. No
still,
one here yet.
Still no foot traffic.
It's pretty empty, just us, us and the producers and just the tech. Like, we're just chilling out here. But I'm seeing some setup. I'm hoping that they make a little breakfast booth for us soon. Would love coffee.
That would be lovely.
Something warm because it's
too
freezing
much,
out here. Okay, it's on the card. LOL. It's Wayne's signature. It's his own card, so it increases the value. One nick on a corner or a scratch, and the card would be worth significantly less.
Mm-hmm. So you got to be. Wayne had to be careful with that signature. I guess he pulled it off.
And then one other text. We got the card fanatics on here. On card autographs are worth more than the sticker autographs. Mm. All right. Now you know. You learn something new every day on the A-List. After the break, Tim Leeper, former Blue Jays first base coach. Let's talk about that dominant weekend against the Red Sox. That's next. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.